the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Hello and welcome to Pure Home with me, Sahanhatu. Well, love is a term that is sometimes thrown around loosely, but unfortunately, we don't realize how important love really is. If we sit and ponder, we'll realize that love is one of the most beautiful, most important terms in the human language. And today, we'll speak about the psychology of love, something that we seek from infancy till our death. We'll go deep into the psychology of love, and of course we'll have other segments, we'll have from here and there a report and much, much more to our program, so you'll definitely want to stay put. Back to the program. Well, we are honored to have back with us Dr. Sayed Mohsen Fatemi to discuss the psychology of love. Hello and welcome to the program. It's wonderful to have you back with us.
Thank you. Hello.
So Dr. Fatemi has done his postdoctoral studies in the Department of Psychology at Harvard University. He teaches in the Department of Psychology at Harvard University, also the University of Massachusetts in Boston, the Boston Graduate School of Psychoanalysis, and Western Washington University. He's a registered psychologist and a keynote speaker at a number of international congresses, as well as a published author. He's also part of the advisory board of the editorial board of American Psychological Association Encyclopedia of Critical Psychology. Well, Dr. Fatemi, today we're going to have a wonderful discussion about the psychology of love, something I'm sure everybody's interested because more or less we all need love, we all seek love. And so let's start off, what is love?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's a good question to begin with the definition of love. Love reminds people of different things. It could be a longing, for example, in some cases. It could be a passionate love, which is associated with a thumping heart, shortness of breath, weakness of knees, and things that are going to be associated with some psychological arousal. In the meantime, we have companionate love, which is a little bit different from passionate love because it has the element of intimacy, but it doesn't have that sense of sexual desire as high and intense as we have in passionate love. We can basically discuss about taxonomy of love in different forms. We have erotic love, we have ludus, which is going to be like a play, sort of game-making love. It's a manifestation of some, okay, I mean, love is a common denominator of so many words. So from the logical parlance, when you speak about love, love reminds people of all these types of love. So you can say pragma, for example, pragmatic love, puppy love, you know, calf love, passionate love, companionate love, manifestation of ludus, debauchery. On the one hand, companionate love on the other hand. So we can have all these manifestations of love. When we discuss and scrutinize the concept of love, it is going to be characterized through a series of factors, a series of components. One is intimacy, the feeling of affection, the feeling of liking, the feeling of closeness. You also have the motivational factor, which is going to be associated with sexual desire, the lust, the passion, and we also have the commitment, the sense of responsibility and accountability towards somebody else. So we have this triangle of love, as Robert Sternberg introduced this concept of triangle of love a few years ago, demonstrating that when we have love, we can have intimacy minus commitment, or we can have intimacy plus commitment, or we can have intimacy, commitment, and motivational factors, and all of them can demonstrate if, for example, a couple who are having love, for example, in their life are going to have this continuation of love for a long period of time, or it's going to be just twinkled in one way and then it's going to be turned off in another way after a while. So the taxonomy of love explicates that true love is going to be characterized through a series of factors. One of them is a feeling of closeness, a feeling of affection. The other one is the drive that allows you to go ahead and proceed with physiological arousal, known as sexual desire, and the sense of responsibility and commitment that you get, and you feel towards the other person.
But this is, just to specify, we're talking about a couple's love. We're not talking about any other forms of love, which we have a form of love for a mother, for a child, and so on and so forth. Here we're focusing on the love in a relationship.
The love in a relationship. Mm-hmm. But obviously when we have love as a panacea, mm-hmm. as philosophers have discussed this since Aristotle and Rumi and others mm-hmm. Discussed the power of love, then you talk about this revitalizing, resuscitating, exhilarating power of love that is going to be giving you the stamina, the power mm-hmm. to proceed. So love, philosophically speaking, provides people with that sense of empowerment, mm-hmm. provides people with that sense of exhilaration. Mm-hmm. When you experience love, you feel expanded. You feel that sense of happiness, that sense of exhilaration, that sense of euphoria, rapture, that allows you to move, to gallop, like mm-hmm. a horse or something, mm-hmm. because it is inexplicable, it is beyond explanation, the power of love. The power of love is going to help the mountains go away, mm-hmm. the seemingly insurmountable obstacles and impediments mm-hmm. fade away, because the power of love is so undeniably intense in the sense of creation, in the sense of development. So when love develops, when love flourishes, it allows people to feel empowered. It allows people to feel exhilarated, expanded. It allows people to experience that sense of euphoria in multifarious aspects of life. When people experience love, they basically feel that sense of development, that sense of power inside themselves. Mm-hmm. So you probably see that people who are brimmed with love, they can overcome the most difficult encumbrances in life, the most conspicuous, the seemingly insurmountable obstacles, they can go and overcome. They can just feel themselves enriched, enhanced mm-hmm. through the power of love. So the power of love offers everybody a panacea that opens up all the shut down doors, that helps people to examine the possibility of resources inside themselves. So love opens up the potential force of experiencing the cultivation, the apex, the apogee of life. Mm-hmm. It allows people taste and experience the fragrance of togetherness, the fragrance of belonging, the redolence of association with a sense of connectedness more than the hackneyed layers of life. Mm-hmm. It allows people to experience that sense of revelation, that sense of disclosure, and it allows people to experience that sense of longing, that sense of, I'm here for that celebration, that mm-hmm. sense of connectedness to a larger spectrum of life. When people experience love, they experience the greatest source of happiness inside themselves. So from a motivational factor, when you think about Romeo and Juliet or other examples in different cultures, you can mm-hmm. see that love allows people to phenomenologically experience in their own lived experience a great, a huge, phenomenal power that provides them with a turbulent, a passionate, a sense mm-hmm. of tornado
well,
inside themselves.
How does it work with them? I think sometimes people feel like, I guess since you referred to Romeo and Juliet, it would only be befitting to say, some people feel like, they say love is pain. They feel like if they're so much in love with someone, they feel like that, it torments them, that love. Is that maybe a skewed version of love? Is there a problem somewhere in between that it's not liberating them and it's not motivating them?
In Islamic philosophy and Islamic mysticism, we discuss the taxonomy of love in different terms. Love, Rumi says, could be an illness, an ailment. Mm-hmm. When somebody is having an overwhelmed flux of absorption. Mm-hmm. When he or she is absorbed in somebody, as if that person is controlling his or her own life, mm-hmm. as we have in mania, which is a possessive love. Mm-hmm. We know, we talk about mania as a type
obsession.
Of love, you know,
yes.
Which you try to possess somebody, and mm-hmm. because of that possession and that possessiveness, things are going to be different. But etymology of love from a Rumi's perspective, an Islamic philosophy's perspective, it reminds you of bindweed, you know. Mm-hmm. Bindweed is a sort of a plant that when you get overwhelmed by that, you know, it just gets you so entangled that you do not see anything. Mm-hmm. And Imam Ali alayhi salam beautifies the concept of love in its etymological sense through a narration saying that when you're in love, in that sense that you just pointed out, you just become blind and deaf because mm-hmm. you don't see anything except that object of love. Mm-hmm. Anywhere you go, you see that person, anything you hear, it reminds you of that resonance. So everything in the world is going to be the manifestation of that sense of love. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we can talk about types of love that incarcerate you, that entangle you, mm-hmm. that gets you fixed and fixated at some specific realm of restriction,
encapsulated.
It encapsulates you, liberating you. Yeah, and in the meantime, we have the type of love that liberates you, the type of love that emancipates you, the type of love that allows you to experience your wings and everything, you know, in a more full-fledged possible form of progression or something. So we can discuss the type of love, you know, that is associated with a sort of short-term, you know, passionate arousal mm-hmm. that is going to be more associated with a transient form of euphoria. It's not going to be everlasting. It's going to be temporary, ephemeral in a specific context. It's more physiological in terms of arousal. You get provoked, you get aroused, and therefore you go for some sort of consummation in the sense of perceptible manifestation of life. And we also have a transcendental life that allows you to experience euphoria and rapture, but not in the sense of a sensuous sort of belonging, because the passion of love is going to be the motivational factor, but it is not going to be evergreen. It's not going to be everlasting. Yeah. It's going to be context-oriented in its specific form. Mm-hmm. Therefore, a romantic love, in order to be able to lead to a companionate love, you need to have the element of intimacy, mm-hmm. the element of passion, the element of commitment all together. Otherwise, people who have got that sense of commitment in their love, mm-hmm. but they don't have passion, they don't have intimacy, they have what they call, psychologists, some of them call empty love. Mm-hmm. People who have got passion without commitment, without intimacy, they just have this for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. People who have got intimacy and commitment without passion, they don't get that sense of galvanizing factor that, you know, allows them to experience this component in a more...
So you're not satiated either way if you're lacking something.
Yeah, but if you have a combination of all of them, the combination of intimacy, the combination of commitment and passion at the same time, you have cognitive factor, which is going to be associated with that sense of commitment. You say, well, I've got that sense of responsibility for this person, mm-hmm. him or her, or I've got passion, so wherever I see him or her, depending on the situation, I just feel aroused and I want to be with him or her. Or that sense of intimacy that you experience, that phenomenological experience of belonging, that sense of longing for that person, that mm-hmm. sense of closeness, that sense of liking or something. So to distinguish between liking and loving, you can see that intense desire associated with love, because it allows you to experience that sense of satiation and consummation as you experience the apex of love. But as I said, we have to also make a distinction between a passionate love mm-hmm. and a transcendental form of life, which is going to be the subject matter of mystical love. And in mystical love, people are going to invite everybody towards the purpose or the etiological aspect of love. Whereas in passionate love, people try to keep that sense of object of love for themselves. They don't allow people to get in to that realm. Mm-hmm. Whereas in mystical love, if you just discuss, for example, the mystical manifestation of love, you address people, you address your disciples, you address the subjects and say, hey, you know, this is the etiological aspect of love. As Rumi talks about this, and it invites people in a promising sense, in an exhilarating sense, to go ahead and join that sense of caravan, that sense of flocks, to get connected to that sense of love. And as a result of that, that love, as you mentioned earlier, it could be liberating, it could be emancipating. Whereas the passionate love gets you in that sense of compartmentalization. It encapsulates you to get that experience of, well, I want to have this monopoly of love. And it could go ahead with that monopoly if it comes from some psychological factor. Some psychologists and psychoanalysts, including Karen Horney, discuss that sometimes some types of love emanate from some internal conflicts. So it does not necessarily suggest that you love the person. It is because that person's presence gets you that sense of comfort or that sense of tranquility or that sense of feeling good about yourself. Yeah, I mean, it could be for possessive sort of love that you want to possess the person in order to have that sense of decency about yourself. And if that person goes away...
Can I just stop you there so that we'll take a break, we'll listen to our story, and of course we'll talk a little bit more about love. So don't go away.
The second coin. Once upon a time, there were some people called writers who wrote letters, complaints, or agreements for the people because not many people at that time were able to write. One of these writers used to sit in a corner of the bazaar and wrote different documents for people. Someday, a naive man went to the writer and sat beside him. Then he said, "Hi, brother. Have a good time. Will you please help me?" The writer said, "My job is writing. If you have something to write, I will do that for you." The stranger said, "I am a writer too. I've come here to ask for your permission to sit on the other side of the bazaar and do my job." The first writer was surprised and said, "Are you a writer too? There isn't enough work for me here, let alone for you." As the second writer heard these words, he started to cry loudly. The first writer said, "Why are you crying?" "Why am I crying?" "If you don't let me do my job of writing here, I will die of poverty and hunger." The first writer felt pity for him and said, "Okay, calm down. Do your job of writing on the other side of the bazaar." At this time, an old man came and told the first writer, "Nobody can read the letters you have written for my son. Tell me what you have written at the end of the letter." The first writer said, "Give me a coin and I will read it for you." The old man gave him a coin and the first writer read the letter. The second writer looked at the old man with astonishment. Then he went and sat on the other side of the bazaar. After a few days, the second writer was walking in the bazaar when he saw his friend. He asked the first writer worriedly, "I've got a question to ask you. Please answer me." "What question?" "Oh, tell me the truth. Why do you charge 2 coins for writing each letter?" "To tell the truth, nobody can read what I write. For the same reason, I charge 1 coin for writing a letter and another coin for reading it." As the second writer heard this, he started to cry loudly. The first writer said, "What's the matter? Why do you cry all the time?" The second writer wiped his eyes with his sleeves and said, "I am deprived of the second coin because I myself can't read my own handwriting." Thank you.
Welcome back to the program. Well, we're talking about the psychology of love, and we're here with Dr. Fatemi, and we spoke about the power of love and what love is altogether, and now we want to go on and talk about a little bit more, expand on the role of love in our lives.
Yeah, you see, when we talk about motivational factors that motivate people to do things, for example, why you do what you do, we have two types of loci or factors that allow people to do something. We have internal locus of control and external locus of control. So, for example, when you want to do something, you just do it because of fringe benefits, you do it because of raise, you do it because of promotion. These are external factors that allow you to do something. In the meantime, simultaneous with external factors, we can always reiterate the possibility of internal factors. Mm-hmm. And among the most important internal factors, one can always discuss the power of love that allows you to be motivating, that allows you to be motivated too. And when you discuss and examine the power of love as a motivational factor, you can see infinite possibilities are going to be developed, and people experience that sense of development when love flourishes. In other words, the power of love allows people to proceed with possibilities. It allows you to visualize the apex of glory. It helps you understand how you can go from whatever you are to numerous possibilities that you can include for yourself or people around yourself. So the power of love is going to enliven you. It's going to resuscitate you. It's a revitalizing power. It allows people, therefore in religious texts you discuss the power of love as something that can turn dead into lively people. Mm-hmm. It allows people to see themselves powerful and passionate and ebullient. You probably have seen people who are working, for example, 9 to 5, mm-hmm. and if you go to them at 5 o'clock in the afternoon when they're going to leave the office, if they have that sense of love in their own work or something, you don't see any sign or demonstration of exhaustion or any mm-hmm. sense of fatigue or something in them, because they see themselves imbued in love. They see themselves soaked in love. Whereas people who have got that sense of, you know, tardiness, that sense of despondency, that sense of despair without love or something, right, you know, from the early hours when they go to work or something, you can see incessant flow of yawns, you can mm-hmm. see incessant flows of fatigue, inundation of despondency, the sense of, well, I'm not going to have anything to do, because that sense of love is not present. So mm-hmm. love is going to be quintessentially effective in terms of providing people with possibilities. It allows people to experience a new world, a new horizon of becoming. It enables people to phenomenologically go through everything with ebullience, with passion, with that sense of awe, that sense of, well, I'm going to go ahead and do it, that sense of perseverance, that sense of zeal or fervor or something mm-hmm. that helps them be motivated and motivating for people around themselves. So when you see love in complexion of people, mm-hmm. you know, you can see that sense of love, specifically if that sense of love is endeared and consecrated through that sense of connectedness to God, it is going to be a huge phenomenal power. And we just passed the month of Safar, you know, from Imam Hussein alayhi salam and others that were the manifestation of glorious love mm-hmm. towards that sense of transcendental connectedness to God. And you can see that in the day of Ashura, when Imam Hussein was approaching the noon time, he was just having the sense of glory of love more into his own complexion or something. So that sense of love demonstrates that as people go through this rudimentary, hackneyed, you know, monotonous form of life, if they have that sense of connectedness, that sense of transcendental belonging, they can experience that phenomenological elatedness, that sense of expansion in a more ontological manner as a power, as the power of love unfolds itself. So love transpires in every corner of one's being. It beautifies the abode of being. It festoons.
For everybody? I mean, I think, usually if we see someone who says, you know what, I'm a loner, I prefer it this way, I don't really need companionship or love, and so, I mean, we would view that person as someone who might be mentally ill or is deprived in one way or another. But is it possible for a person to just be completely content being isolated and not needing that love? Is that possible?
Well, everybody needs to be loved and everybody needs to love. Mm-hmm. This is some sort of one of those primordial needs that everybody has got. So if people do not experience that sense of satiation of love, mm-hmm. or that sense of need to be loved, they would have some psychosocial problems or dysfunctions. Mm-hmm. The point is that you need to discover the source of love that you can get connected to. Mm-hmm. You know, love for you may be the love of books. You could be a bibliophile. For somebody else, it could be a love of money. Somebody else could be the love of cars. Somebody else could be the love of something else. We can talk about the hierarchy of love. You know, people are going to have different objects for their love. But philosophically speaking, the argument here lies in the fact that as people get expanded, their change of love is going to be conspicuous in their own behaviors, in their own attitudes. Mm-hmm. When teenagers, for example, are going through their own years of teens, they have, you know, the demonstration of love, for example, from the perceptible physical objects, mm-hmm. from one to the other. That's why we have this emergence of puppy love in their own process of development. And you can see that if they have a pimple or something in their face, they would be so obsessed. What if people, for example, notices this? Mm-hmm. And what if my love cannot, you know, appreciate or celebrate me as I used to be celebrated because of that sense? But as they get that expansion psychologically, you can see that they go ahead from a physiological involvement to a more moral sort of, or a psychological or spiritual form of development. I'm not negating or denouncing or condemning or ignoring or marginalizing the power of passionate love. I'm just saying that as we go ahead with this progress or development of stages of life and love, we can see that numerous stages of love and life can manifest themselves. You can have a, you know, you can have a great passionate life and a passionate love, and at the same time, along with your passionate form of life and love, you can also search and grope for other possibilities of love in a more transcendental aspect. And the combination of these would help people develop that sense of development in terms of competencies. Can flourish when people experience both passionate love and transcendental life, and transcendental love too. And the combination of passionate love and companionate love would help people experience that sense of prosperity in terms of love and life because of the power of life. Otherwise, people have that, I've got that sense of shortage, you know. Mm-hmm. People who are not experiencing that sense of being loved, they would always, psychologically speaking, demonstrate that desire that there's something missing in my life, and that desire is going to manifest itself in a sense of, say, in a sense of hunger, in a sense of thirst for people who are inundated with that shortage, who are inundated with that sense of, well, I need to be loved, but I haven't got that sense of you know, satiation. And therefore, it could manifest itself after it just fails to be satiated in numerous psychological phenomena. And the bitterness happens when they go, for example, in a relationship and they have not achieved, or they have not reached that sense of satiation in the previous years of their life.
Mm-hmm. So basically, to get that ultimate, that peak, I guess, to help you to expand and to seek your opportunities in life and to help you grow, you need to get that. I mean, you can have the infatuation and the passionate love and so on and so forth, but you need that ultimate love to help you to grow in life.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, we'll go for a break. When we come back, it's time for From Here and There. Welcome back. Well, in this segment of the program, we have From Here and There with my colleague Farhad Vafaju. In this part of the program, we have an email from you, our dear viewers, an interesting book we'll introduce you, and of course, an informative article. So, Mr. Vafaju, take it away.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sarju.
Really.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this part of the show from Here and There Studinger, the first part of this show with an interesting article. A new study conducted by the American researchers suggests that daily consumption of vitamin E can improve the brain health and help protect against dementia. Study of 613 people with mild to moderate Alzheimer's unraveled that high doses of vitamin E could make the rate of brain decline slower. The participants divided into three groups received either a daily dose of vitamin E, a dementia drug treatment known as memantine, a combination of vitamin E and memantine, or placebo. Researchers monitored the participants' ability to carry out everyday tasks such as washing or dressing more than 2 years. The research reveals that those ones who took vitamin E had slower functional decline than those people who received placebo. Vitamin E is fat-soluble compounds with distinctive antioxidant activities that helps protect cells from damage by free radicals. Free radicals can damage tissues and organs in the body. Numerous foods provide vitamin E, such as nuts, seeds, and vegetable oils. Significant amounts are available in green leafy vegetables and fortified cereals. Welcome back. Today I'm going to introduce you to the book Ethics and Spiritual Growth, written by Sayyid Mujtaba Musavi Lori. The book draws its material from the rich Islamic sources and represents the ethos of religious teachings. Besides, it presents the views and opinions of Western scholars concerning the problems relating to education and psychology. It also serves as a beneficial moral and social guide. Now, a little information on the writer. Sayyid Mujtaba Musavi Lori, a great scholar in Islam, was born in 1925 in the city of Lahr, where he completed his primary education and his preliminary Islamic studies. In 1953, he departed for Qom to continue his study of the Islamic sciences, studying under the professors and teachers of the religious institution, including the main authorities in jurisprudence. Well, today we have an email written to us by Elias. He says, "Hello, I'm so interested in the issues you speak about in your program, especially the psychological ones. I ask you to speak about the important issue of love. And my question is, do we have unconditional love?" Dr. Fatemi, you are the most qualified to answer this question.
Yes, we have unconditional love. Unconditional love is a concept that was introduced by Carl Rogers, the psychologist, who discussed that when kids are not receiving that sense of love from their parents in an unconditional manner, they would develop some sort of dysfunction later on in their life. Unconditional love suggests that somebody can love you without any sort of condition, without any sort of terms or something. And that love is rarely found, but it's going to be possible through a series of connectedness to God on the one hand, and also unconditional love can demonstrate its power in some relationship that are going to be away from masquerading, pretentious, ostentatious, supercilious forms of mask or something. So it is achievable, but it has to be attained through its own path of conditions.
But what causes this unconditional love? Is it psychological, physiological, or what? Fear of what? Fear of being in isolation?
Well, unconditional love suggests that people would like to be loved without any condition. If somebody loves you because, for example, you're a doctor, you're an engineer, you're a producer, that's not an unconditional love. If somebody loves you because of your wealth, because of your power, because of your possessiveness, because of your paraphernalia, that's not unconditional love. Loving somebody, it's like one of the manifestations of unconditional love can be found in a love of a mother towards the child. So a mother loves his or her child without any condition, no matter the child cries or yells or comes back with sadness or happiness, the mother's love is always available, is always accessible. Whereas in other forms of love, you would always, not always, I hate to use this frequency adverb because of its dogmatic power, but you have that sense of, if, for example, she catches a cold, I'm not going to love her. If she turns out to be pale, for example, I'm not going to love her. That is not unconditional love. Unconditional love happens when you try to love somebody without any condition, and it is going to be the manifestation of the greatest power that someone can experience phenomenologically in embracing the true power of love.
So, except for our parents, can we create this unconditional love, especially towards our significant others, including our spouses?
Well, one of the problems is that the parents sometimes ask kids to do things that they want to do, but the kids don't want to do. Or they ask them to not do things that they want to do, but they themselves, the parents, want them to do. And this develops conditions of worth. And kids learn to be responding to different terms and conditions because of what parents ask them to do or urge them to do. And as a result of that, they do not experience that sense of pure, genuine form of love. And later on in their life, because of lack of receiving that power of love, they just come up with different dysfunctions in their own psychological approaches or responses towards people because they have not received that sense of pure love on behalf of parents.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fatemi. Well, Elias, I hope you have found the response quite convincing. Well, that's it for this part of From Here and There. Thanks for watching. Back to Ms. Afju.
Thank you very much, Mr. Afju. Now it's time for our clip, and of course, after our clip, we'll be back with more discussion on love.
Ey vardı زنهار عرض دور بر جانان پیام ما حافظ زدیده دانه اشکی همی فشان دیده دانه اشکی همی فشان باشد که مرغ وست کند قصد دام ما باشد که مرغ وست کند قصد دام ما.
Welcome back to the program. Well, we're speaking about love, but we only have 3 minutes or so left, Dr. Fatemi. So just to end off, of course, we will discuss love more in our next Sunday, next week. We'll continue our discussion about the psychology of love. But just to end off, we want to know people who want to be loved. We all want to be loved. What can you do to get people to love you? And we talked about this in the break. We said if you don't love yourself, other people are not going to love you. So what are some things you can do to get people to love you?
Well, if you want to be loved, you got to be lovable. If you're not lovable, people are not going to be loving you. And in order to be lovable, you have to find out and examine what are the kind of things that can make you lovable. The problem or the mistake people make is that they try to be loved or they want to be loved and they like to be loved and they love to be loved, but they do not have any sort of investment on their own behalf. Mm. In their loving account, when you see everything, you see that there is nothing. There is just emptiness. And
so that, no possibility for withdrawal.
Yeah, and then when they write a check or something, the check is going to be bounced. Mm. So if you want to be really loved or something, you got to be lovable through having got some deposits in your loving bank account. Mm. And in your loving bank account, you got to be making sure that you are paying attention towards people around you. You're going to be sensitive. You're going to be receptive. You're going to have the suggestion or demonstration of the least forms of empathy and rapport. You need to have the crystallization of an amicable, amiable sort of conversation with people. You need to get your behavior characterized through a tendency of openness, flexibility, proactive listening to people's needs, desires, wants, and positions. And you need to, in practice, not in words.
I hate to stop you there because I'm sure a lot of viewers want to hear all this, but we will discuss this again next week, so don't forget you can tune in to hear more about love. Don't forget, go on our website, sahartv.ir is our website, and drop us a line, purehome@sahartv.ir is our email. Thanks so much for tuning in and inviting us into your pure home. Until next time, goodbye and God bless.